With her debut novel, The Tiger's Wife, Taya Obrecht became the youngest writer on the New Yorker's 20 under 40 list and was named to the 2010 National Book Foundation 5 under 35 list. Taya was born in 1985 in the former Yugoslavia. She spent her childhood in Cyprus and Egypt. Her family settled in the States in 1997, and she attended the University of Southern California, receiving her MFA from Cornell. Welcome, Taya. Thank you so much for stopping by the Book Report.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are truly one of the stars of the literary world right now. How do you handle all the adulation?
I think that it's, you know, just I feel overwhelmingly grateful. I know plenty of writers who write for years and then have one breakthrough book, or who struggle with getting a readership. And I just feel so very, very fortunate that all this is happening to me. It's a gamble.
How does it affect you when you sit down to write your next work?
I think that the biggest consequence has sort of been time. I've been on tour pretty much since March, with a few stops in the, you know, in between, and I'll be on tour through April still. So I haven't really had time to sit down and get entrenched in a novel the way I really need to be. But I think that it's important in a way, because it's helping me to get disconnected from The Tiger's Wife. I don't want every sentence in the next one to sound like a sentence from the last one. So I think that time is the only way to do that.
I wondered why a tiger and not a lion, who is king of the jungle, but why a tiger?
You know, the book was inspired because of a National Geographic episode that I saw on TV, and it actually started with an image of a tiger in the snow. That was sort of the triggering moment for me. I thought there was something just incredible about that, this sounds so silly, but the contrast of a tiger standing in a snowy forest. I mean, and Siberian tigers do live in snow, which is sort of a strange evolutionary, you know, not mix up, but you know, it's clearly not camouflage. So something about that image was very powerful for me, and it stuck.
Yeah. Animals play a very important role in this book. How important are they to you?
They're very important. I grew up going to zoos, which sounds sort of weird and sad, but I think that I have a childlike fascination with animals, and I'm a total nature show nerd. And I will still, you know, if I'm in a new city for long enough, I will still go to a zoo. So the way they work in the book and in my other work is to reroute the character. They sort of get dropped in as these out of place, you know, roadblocks, and they reroute the character's reactions and decisions. And I don't know quite why that is, but I'm trying to develop some theories.
Kind of like the elephant that makes his way in the nighttime that the grandfather takes the main character to see.
Exactly, yeah. It's sort of a... the character's life is going along at a certain pace with certain preoccupations, and then something outside of it comes in and is jolting. And that outside influence, usually in my work, is some kind of animal. Why is that? I don't...
All right, let's talk about The Jungle Book, which was so key to this story. How did you come to choose that as such the prized possession of the grandfather?
You know, it's funny how that happens. I grew up with The Jungle Book, and with the second Jungle Book as well, with The Jungle Book set. It was one of the first books that I read in Serbo-Croatian, and then one of the first books that I read in English. So I have a very deep childhood connection to it. Its role in the novel really was meant to just be a way for the grandfather to understand what a tiger is physically, you know, the animal, the entity, what is a tiger. And then as the novel progressed and all these layers sort of started to work together, I realized that the book itself had to have much more importance than that, that the book became a talisman of the grandfather's life. And that was one of those unexpected surprises of writing a novel. You don't realize how much of it is going to run away with itself.
I have to ask, which book was more vivid, the Serbo-Croatian one or the one in English? What did you were more entranced by when you were reading it?
Oh my goodness. Maybe a good way to answer this is when somebody says The Jungle Book to me, the associated image that I have is of the Serbian cover.
In the book, of course, it's such a strong relationship between the main character and her grandfather. Is that similar in your life? Are you that close with your grandparents?
I am, and I was certainly very, very close with my grandfather, and it was a huge shock to me when he died. And you know, that was the emotional trigger for the book. I wouldn't have written it without that event, which is sort of a strange thing to think about. It's like something that I'm living with now every day as a huge positive in my life is derived from a great tragedy. So I'm trying to figure out how I feel about that. I guess that's the best possible outcome of tragedy. But I'm very close to my grandparents. They raised me. They lived with us until I was 12. So I still go back to Serbia to visit my grandmother once a year. And the relationship between Natalia and her grandfather ended up being very heavily based on my relationship with mine, which was another one of those surprises. I was like, I'm not writing about my grandfather. This is just some grandfather. And then finished it and went back and was like, oh. So, yeah.
There are two worlds in the book, present day, the real world, and the more mystical, folkloric world. How did you meld the two? How did you accomplish that feat in your novel?
I think that understanding when I went back to the Balkans in 2010, and I was going back every year, but certainly not in a research capacity. I had always previously, you know, I had understood that there was a conflict between those two worlds in Balkan life in general. But and the book was already written and it was already being edited. And then I went back in 2010 to research vampires for a nonfiction piece for Harper's. And ended up realizing, because we were asking people these incredibly uncomfortable questions about their lore and about their regional history and about how they felt about having that kind of association with their own past and how they lived with it, I realized that often the world of myth and the world of fable becomes very much a reality of history that people live with in the Balkans. So I think that really reinforced that and helped me to understand how to navigate it, you know, how to negotiate it in the book.
In your research for the vampires, I mean, were people telling you actual interactions they had witnessed with vampires?
Yes, they were. people had, you know, people that we visited lived in villages that that have a very strong presence in vampire history, like Kisiljevo or Zarozhye, and those are places that, you know, when you read, you know, the history of the vampire by, you know, Vampire von Vampire or whatever.
I read that.
It's good, isn't it? Christmas reading. No, when you read those tomes, you know, you see these village names. And when we went to look for these places, we knew that they or something derivative of them would exist. And they didn't really show up on maps proper. You sort of had to find the village next to it, find the village on the other side of it, and then drive between them to come to the place. But people living there, you know, very much lived with their history. We met a man who had seen a vampire in his young adulthood, and he was like pushing 93, and his whole, you know, he lived in a house with his whole family, generations and generations of it, and they had all been told this story, but when he came to tell us the story, everybody lined up to hear it again.
So let's talk about Eastern European writers. I think most American readers aren't very familiar. Who would you suggest to sort of have people get their feet wet?
Bulgakov.
Say that name again slowly.
It's Mikhail Bulgakov, or Mikhail Bulgakov. Sorry, that was a mispronunciation. I also really love Ivo Andrić, who is, you know, the Yugoslav, I'll say Yugoslav now, noblest and just incredible writer. He wrote The Bridge on the Drina and several, I'm trying to think of it in translation, The Damned Yard and other stories. And you know, just wonderful, wonderful writing. And he was a historian, and he also had a real feel for that relationship between history and the present and history and myth and how they all combine.
Well, after your exhaustive book tour, are you already writing the next book?
I am in my mind. sorry. I've started the next one. Had a few sort of hiccups along the way, a few false starts. But I think that I've finally latched onto something that I really do care about. My biggest preoccupation was having the same feeling towards the project that I did about the tiger's wife, which was, I must write this no matter what happens. You know, I you know, clearly there's something going on in the act of writing this that is a necessary process for me. And I think that without that feeling, the next one will just be dead as a project, as a, you know, work of mine. So I just want to get that back. And now I think that I have it. Thank God.
Well, we'll be waiting for it. Well, it's an amazing, entrancing, bewitching book. And thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.